I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
J. Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say I...
Your three choices are beginner.
Yes.
Intermediate.
Yes.
Or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless you use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out or whether, you know, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J. Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks. Hello.
And welcome to Guitar Nerds. My name is Mark Peckham, and I'm here to introduce everyone.
Hello, and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Peckham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
J. Cross.
Hi.
And Joe...
Oh, hello there, Mark.
Wow, sun's out and suddenly we've all come back to life. I felt last week's podcast, I felt a little lethargic.
Did you?
I felt a little disappointed in our own performance last week.
I thought
that
was good.
Patreon was very good. I seem to remember the Patreon being very good, but... Go on, Matt.
I just realised that your shelf is rather bare, Jay.
Yeah,
what happened?
Well, I mean,
it's a bare shelf.
I'm moving house on Friday, so I've started packing stuff away, and the easiest thing to pack away first was the stuff that is in boxes.
Guitar pedals.
So the pedals are the first thing to go, and next thing is the next level of shelving, which currently is now just my Watkins copycat, a picture of Dale Cooper and a picture of Woodrow Wilson as depicted in that episode of The Simpsons.
It's not actually Woodrow Wilson though, is it?
No, it's
someone else.
I can't remember what the fella's name is. Maddie's shrugging her shoulders and looking annoyed.
So this is, if people used to watch the video version of the podcast, this is when the part of your flat where all the pedals were stacked up behind us, they've now all gone into boxes ready for a big move.
Yep. Which we're doing on Friday.
Yes,
excited?
I've been roped into helping out. And the podcast is going to move back to mine for a bit. So if it sounds different next week, that's why it sounds different. Because I'm going to be moving as well. So
joy.
That's a quick catch up in all our
there
lives.
You go.
You know,
that's great.
Matt Knight, what's been going on with you this week?
First of all, social news. I have deactivated my Twitter account.
Have you?
So you can no longer follow me on Matt_Knightsy.
Can someone else go and grab it though?
Sure, why not?
No, I don't think so. I think if you've just deactivated, then the account is still there. The handle is still there.
Is it not that if you don't use it for a certain amount of time, if you don't reactivate it, then...
Don't think so.
Really? You can just park it and
think
not do so. It?
Think about all those like hundreds of podcast episodes that are still in circulation that people might listen to tomorrow.
Yeah, well, they'll go there and it'll say, sorry, denied. So if you go to Matt_Nightsy on Twitter at the moment, what actually happens?
I think it still brings up my account because you get 14 days... In case you were like, God, what did I do? What did I do that for? And then you can go back and change your mind.
See, I'm telling you, Jay, you've been on the Twitter bandwagon, but people are leaving, man. It's
Matt hasn't tweeted in like a year.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I actually hadn't tweeted in nearly 2 years, apart from 2 retweets. So I was just like, this is... So just follow the Guitar Nerds Instagram instead, because I'm all about that.
Everyone's going to da Insta. I've been going through and deleting my tweets. It's really cathartic. There's a program that does it, and like you can go, delete everything, the whole thing, or you can go anything older than 30 days or anything older than a week. It's really good. Really, really nice. Anyway, have you done anything guitar related, Matt?
I have. I played some guitar, so that's relatively guitar related. But yesterday I had a lovely interview with Blake Weiland from the Tone Mob. I featured on his podcast. We had a good chat.
A little bit of moonlighting on another podcast.
Yeah, I think because he's interviewed right? You've been on it as well?
I have, yeah, it was good fun. It's good, he asked me about pizza.
Yeah, he asked me about pizza as well. I said, as long as it's not ham and pineapple, it's all right.
I'll stand behind the ham and pineapple.
Nah,
I'm into
hug.
It. I'm into it.
The only thing worse than pineapple on pizza is sweet corn on pizza.
Oh, you're crazy.
Sweet corn on pizza, sweet corn doesn't deserve to be, it's not a... It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, sweet corn on pizza.
No, it don't make any sense.
Anyway, so what did you talk about, Matt?
We talked about Boss, because he wanted to delve into the Boss, because, you know, we kind of cut it short on the old Guitar Nerds podcast now. So we talked about Boss for a bit, and then we talked about boutique pedal builders and how many people he knows, which is ridiculous and unfair. because he lives near so many people, and I think he basically knows everyone who builds pedals in America.
Yeah, Portland, where he is quite a hub for boutique builders at the moment. So yeah, I guess he's got a lot of people close by.
And we talked a little bit about the history of kind of like Wampler and some of the people he knows, and kind of the prices of boutique pedals and the kind of level of hardcore research that goes into some things, and kind of how it ties into sort of Boss. And he had a couple of Boss urban legends that he wanted to clarify with me, or at least one urban legend that he wanted to clarify with me, which actually is true.
When we won't spoil what that is, but would you know when the podcast is coming out?
I think it's coming out next week.
Okay,
I will check with him, and then maybe I will put something in the Facebook group. But it was quite good, and we used a crazy app that I've never used before called Ringer.
Yeah, where you can just phone each other and it records it. It's pretty it's pretty useful.
Yeah, and then it just like sends it into the cloud, and then just emails it to the person who's the host, all mixed down and ready to go. So
yeah, some super neat. So I saw on Facebook you were playing a bit of guitar yesterday. Anything new, or are you just messing around with?
No, I finally wired my pedal board up. I took it apart just after years, and I only really got around to wiring up again last week. I've just been sort of playing around with that, and got that Fuzz Rocious Feed Me, which I was talking about last week, which is awesome, and just been playing with the kind of Echo Line Roadrunner, which we reviewed. When did we do the review for that? November, I think it came out on the Guitar Nerds channel, and I think it's still probably one of my favourite drive pedals.
So good. Great sounding pedal. Gear of the year. It was 100% Gear of the Year. Yeah.
Great pedal. Great pedal.
Worth mentioning, this week's Patreon, as voted for by the Guitar Nerds Forum members, is the Ungiggable Rig. So we're going to get more of the lowdown on the Ungiggable Rig later on in the Patreon episode. So,
I'm excited.
Jay Cross, apart from packing, have you actually managed to do any guitar stuff, or have you just put it all in boxes?
A lot of it's in boxes. I also went on holiday this week. So I did the podcast. We did the podcast. This week's disappeared so fast. Did a podcast last Monday, and then Maddie and I got up at 4 o'clock on Tuesday morning to go on holiday.
That's when I was finishing editing and uploading the podcast.
Was it
about the time? Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice.
Takes a long time.
It's good. You could have given us a hand to the train station.
Yeah.
We went to Valencia, which is really nice. Didn't see any guitars there.
Okay, good.
We're only there for 2 days, so we just like looked at the streets and stuff.
Nice.
It's good.
So basically, you're as close as you've come to guitar stuff is when you were putting all the pedals in boxes today.
In boxes, yeah, that's right.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Well,
yeah,
I'm glad you're with us this week still.
Well, you know,
you're here for moral support and
absolutely.
Talk through the news.
That's right. That's right. That's what I'm here for this week.
Joey B, have you done any more than Jay Cross this week in terms of guitar stuff?
Have I?
You took a special delivery.
Yes,
from a listener.
Did. That was actually that was the highlight of my week.
Do you want to explain a bit more and maybe give props where they're due?
Okay. So yes. So Alex Chapman, a dedicated podcast listener,
yes,
drove all the way down. From St. Albans, I think it was St. Albans.
Okay.
To deliver to us, or to me, to us.
Yes.
To you.
All the Total Guitars.
Yeah, is it just Total Guitar?
It's Total Guitar, but there are also, and I mean, like, all of them. I think there are some missing, sort of. I think it starts around 1996.
Yeah.
And goes up to, I don't know, I've only started flicking through, but sort of relatively recently. There are some sort of still unopened in, like, their mail order packs.
Really?
Yeah, so...
So, Alex drops off, basically, how much was it?
About 100 kilos.
100 kilos of guitar magazines.
Of guitar magazines and all the CDs that came with them.
Yep.
And then there were some really nice little extras included as well. Things like a late 90s Ibanez catalogue.
Okay.
Was in there. And there are a couple of other bits I can't remember now. I'll start to go through them. To be honest, I've been really, really enjoying looking up My Guitar Shop's old ads from the 90s.
Yeah, seeing what was in there.
Yeah, they're just ridiculous. Well, every company's were, like,
because they're all just lists.
Before Guitar Shops had marketing departments. It's amazing.
Well, it's not that. I guess it's before they had websites. Yeah. So yeah, it was just lists of things they had in stock and how much they were.
Well, yeah, things that
I remember looking
at
it through like PRSs and stuff and being like, oh, they've got like a custom 24 in stock, and then looking at the price and being like, I'm never going to afford that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there was loads of shops. It's funny because you look now, and I remember looking at those guitar magazines and seeing loads of shops that now just don't exist.
Yeah,
I think they basically got wiped out when everyone moved to the internet. And
Flying Pig,
Flying
Pig. Do you remember them?
Flying Pig. Yeah, that was the one. Yeah.
That was a. I had a friend who bought a guitar from Flying Pig, and it was essentially just like an Argos. Like,
yeah,
you went in, it was a little hole cut in the wall. And the guy
went, an actual shop?
Yeah, yeah. And the guy went, well, they did mainly mail order, which is why the shop was like this. But yeah, you went in, went to the counter and went, oh, have you got a Mexican telly? And he's like, yeah, hang on, go and get it, give you the box. They didn't have any amps or anything you could plug into. They just gave you the box of the guitar and went, see you later. It's like, here's 300 quid or whatever.
Wow, weird.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But it was, it's great. We're going to do loads of, we've got to do some Patreon and some...
And
content on them.
The plan is, I think, to try and find the gear of the year
from each year,
and do a special Patreon series where we read through the mag and like discuss the gear of the year that year.
I'm really excited about
that. We'll try and do them in order.
Yes.
But you need to dig them out
first.
Yes,
yeah. I want to go through them anyway and bring out choice things. So there were like, I was flicking through old ones. I found like the magazine that had like the launch of the Line 6 pod in it.
Amazing.
I found an incredible advert for like it was a £400 Yamaha multi-effects. And I'm making a list. I can't remember the name of it now because this is just sort of...
It wasn't like the Magic Stomp or something like
no,
that.
No. It was... It looked awful. It's one of those things...
Oh, was it the UAD? The UAD 99?
I couldn't tell you even if you named it now, because I was just making a list of all the really weird... sort of rubbish bits that are in there, but it was
the one that you sent a picture of was the Squire M77.
That was the guitar, yeah, which was Squire.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, that was Squire doing a Les Paul.
So what that is?
But it's a Guild model, yes.
Indeed,
I know what it is,
so yeah. When Fender bought Guild, there was already a model
I've got the De'Armond version.
You had the De'Armond, which is the same thing, essentially.
Yeah,
the De'Armond version. Although I think the Squires were glued neck rather than bolt on, because I seem to remember your Diana one. But yeah, Squire, it's essentially a Squire Les Paul, the M77.
Unbelievable. I can't believe they did it.
Yeah, totally. There's loads of weird stuff around that time, because Squire were doing, and Fender also were doing, a lot of Korean set neck stuff around that time. So that's when you got things like the Squire Esquire Scorpion, which was a like a gloss black glued neck Esquire with a humbucker and a scorpion inlay on the 12th fret.
Oh, that's everything you've ever wanted in a guitar.
They also did something, I think it was called the Celtic, which was that, but it had like a green finish, like a dark green finish with a Celtic cross on the 12th fret as well. Just ridiculous. Like, why did those guitars exist?
That's mad.
Joe, you should try and find some, if you see any vintage Boss adverts, because I'm collecting some at the moment, and a friend of mine in Australia found one from America where at a point they were giving away scores of mopeds if you bought Boss gear in store.
Really?
Yeah.
That's,
there's like selective stores in America where you could basically win a moped if you bought some Boss pedals.
That's so good.
But yeah, this is kind of this is very much a soft announcement of this, because
something that we're going to do down the line.
Yeah, we're going to. I'm really, really grateful to Alex, because we can do so much with these. This is so much content. I also really loved, speaking of the Squire M77, and around that time, Fender seemed to be like every product in there. They were obviously putting quite a lot of money into the magazine when something like as much of a rip-off as the Squire M77 can come with a tagline from Total Guitar. Not just another lookalike. This distinctive Squire has a style of its own.
Yeah, and when it's actually a rebranded version of a guitar made by one of their subsidiary companies, which is a knockoff of another really famous guitar shape.
It's so good.
It's a style all of its own. I don't know what you what could you possibly mean. So I think what would be good is maybe if you just pull some random mags that aren't the Gear of the Year ones.
Yeah.
And just leave them in case we're ever short of news on a podcast, and you can pick out some good stuff, and we'll do it on there. But
yeah, I'm going to do some read-throughs, I think, of some of the magazines. Well, it's going to be great. There's going to be loads of stuff, but also we got a couple of other little presents, courtesy of Alex, in the ridiculous amount of bags full of magazines and CDs.
It wasn't a horse's head, was it?
No, it wasn't a horse's head. But he did give us a couple of pedals,
did he?
Which was pretty cool.
Oh, you didn't declare this.
Did I not?
I just gone under the radar, straight on eBay.
We got a slightly customized for me version of the TC Mojo.
The best drive pedal of the last 5 years.
I'll tell you what it is. It's the best paperweight of the last 5 years. But nice try. Anyway,
mate, those pedals are wicked.
Well, this one's broken. You did actually tell me.
Oh,
this.
Okay.
I did. Yeah. But it now says Mojo.
I
am using it as a paperweight at work. And anyway, it's going to be the subject of a Branton Ranton anyway.
Why?
Because
it's great.
The most overrated drive pedal.
No, you're a mug, mate. You're a mug. I bought two of those, and both of them I lent to friends and never got back.
Well,
what was the other pedal?
The other pedal was, what's that company that you can only get at Anderson's? Is it Tone City. It's the Tone City Golden Plexi.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good mini pedal.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Now, Alex was saying he could only, it just screamed whenever he turned it on through his amp, and it just really was completely unsuitable for him.
Yeah.
So he sort of passed it on for us to do a bit.
Does it work?
Yeah. It works fine. It's just that it doesn't work for him with the way his amp setup is.
Interesting, because we've still got the Pedal Pal FX, other one. We've got loads of Marshall pedals.
I'd like to do a bit of a shootout of these things, especially because we've got things like that. That Golden Plexi is a really good rep.
Yep.
And
Golden Brownie.
We really rate the Golden Brownie as well. And then, you know, of course, what's that one that you really like?
Pedal Pal FX.
Yeah, that's the one you want to get on your board. And of course, Matt, you bought one of the Marvel drives.
Marvel Drive, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it anymore, but we've got one.
We can do some shootouts with those. So,
yeah.
Oh, go on, Jay.
I was just going to say, speaking of gifts and shoutouts and stuff, after the podcast last week, where I think you're right, we were feeling a little bit lethargic, and I was talking about how I wanted to drink a coffee. Jake Gray, who listens to the podcast, got in touch, and he was like, "Oh, I just wanted to let you know that I'm like an amateur coffee roaster."
Nice.
And just just wanted to send you a bag of coffee if you like. Aww, making
I want
it.
A bag of coffee.
So
no,
Jake,
Matt.
No, not no. So yeah, thanks very much, Jake. I just had an email from him today saying that he's posted them out. So
oh, amazing.
Is he posting them here?
Yeah, he's posting them here, but he does know that I'm moving house at the end of the week.
Right,
he said
fine.
They left yesterday, I think.
Fine,
but
fine.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. So thanks very much, Jake.
So
really appreciate that.
Basically, this whole opening segment has been, if you've got any freebies, any yeah, other guitar mags lying around, just let us know.
But I'm gonna dig out all the, because there are sort of the, you know, the occasional catalogue in there, so I'm gonna dig those out because I think we could do some really fun stuff with
that. Be cool.
These.
Yeah
definitely be good.
They're there to like decorate the studio once we get it, like stick up like an Electro-Harmonics catalogue from, I'd love to see the pedals that Electro-Harmonics don't do anymore, like, you know, some.
I mean, in terms of the 90s stuff, there isn't that many,
isn't there?
No, they still sort of, nothing really gets discontinued. Okay. I mean,
I think that
just
the biggest
gets repurposed
thing is like the 70s and before they went bust, there's like loads of stuff that occasionally just sort of pops up on eBay and I'm like, I've never seen that before, and it's like really weird big box like analog pedals that they probably made for like a year.
Definitely
but
yeah,
no one's ever catalogued it.
No,
there's no resource for that at all.
Well, effects database has probably got some of that stuff on there, I'd imagine, but any other news, Joe Branton?
I've got a bass.
You finally got a bass. Do you want to talk about that when you've actually got it?
We can talk about it when I got it.
Okay, let's do that. Let's leave them hanging on for the big news. I wanted to talk about three new pedals that have come our way that I've been trying out this week. First off, the Ground Control Audio.
Oh, to Major Tom.
The Ground Control Audio Amoretsu. Amoretsu? It's kind of an overdrive, basically. Amoretsu, as far as I'm aware, is a Japanese goddess of the sun. And the idea behind this pedal is that it's a make gooder pedal. It's a brightness kind of treble booster. Sounds really good, really aggressive, really nice and bright. Kind of does the opposite to, well, not so much the opposite, but it kind of does more than something like the Dunlop Echoplex Pre, in that it's quite a lot brighter than that. If you're looking for a really jangly guitar sound, then that would definitely be one to check out. Also got the Rock Fabric Effects. Rock Fabric Effects Aqualung, which is a really good sort of transparent drive. Put that up against the Soul Food and it kind of sounds a bit nicer. And amazing artwork on it as well. I know we get kind of slated for talking about how pedals look rather than how they sound. But really well put together. And also this week, Matt, are you familiar with the company Drybell Effects?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they make a really good Univibe pedal called the Vibe Machine.
They do, which is...
Sorry, what is it called again?
Drybell.
Consummate professional there, Joe.
So the Drybell Effects Vibe Machine is the one that's landed with us. And
oh, amazing.
I'm very, very surprised at just how good it sounds.
I've heard maybe nearly 10 people say it's the best Vibe pedal they've plugged in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cheap, I don't think. I think they're nearly £300, if I remember right.
Something like that, yeah. It also got sent through with some sort of expression. I think it must be like a fast, slow thing. I've not really had time to plug it in. I plugged the pedal in, the Vibe machine itself. I've not plugged in the expression. And it sounds very, very good indeed.
Yeah. It's a fast, slow switch.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's an expression pedal, so you can...
It's not, no, when I say expression, it's...
Oh, it's like a tap button.
Yes,
yeah,
like
it's like a, up or down. Basically.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah, but, it's very,
it's
very...
It's been
good.
On my list to try for quite a while. Yeah, €298.
Wow, so, I didn't realise it was that much money. It is very, very good, really well built as well. Like, a lot of the time you get these kind of boutique pedals through and you can tell they've just bought like a stock box, like a, you know, a cast box, and... a lot of time they're a bit flimsy, whereas this actually feels really, really well put together.
And it's got loads of extra, I think it's got six extra tone pots on the side as well, like little
trim pots. Yeah, sure, I missed that, but yeah, definitely. Like I said, I only had like 5 minutes to plug it in, so I've not really had too much time to mess around with it. But yeah, demos of all those coming soon. I just want to give people a shout out as to what's arrived. I'm really into that Amoretsu.
Yeah, it looks really good, that.
Yeah, really nice. Really just super jangly. Just bring out the top end and everything. If you're kind of looking to do that with your sound, then that is an awesome way of doing it. Should we dive in some news?
Newbie.
So first up, some bass news. Warwick have announced the Custom Shop Masterbuilt Sklar bass.
Holy moly.
Who is Sklar?
Leyland Sklar.
Okay. Tell me more. Tell me more. Did she have,
oh,
did he have a Sklar?
Oh, everyone knows who Leyland Sklar is. Yeah, Leyland Sklar is like Gandalf. The Gandalf of the bass.
He does look quite beardy.
Yes.
Go on. Tell us about him.
Leyland Sklar is like an old-timey session geezer who has always been well-known for playing really weird stuff. Like 20 years ago, he was playing fan fret basses.
Okay.
And stuff. Like, you know, he's... For a guy who looks like... kind of like Gandalf, he and speaks a lot like him as well.
How would that go with
an American accent, but you know, he's very like a husky old dude.
If you
but
were,
he just loves like really cool modern gear.
But what would it sound like if he sort of told us about his bass and the sort of spec and stuff?
I'm not going to do it in there. I can't do the Gandalf in an American accent.
Well, it doesn't matter, just do the
no,
Gandalf.
No, because I want people to take it
tell
seriously.
Me about
it's a
the
really
spec.
Cool thing. Okay. What? The Warwick are doing some cool stuff at the moment. I'll do it in a minute. Warwick are doing some cool stuff at the moment. They've had like this Warwick bass players like school club thing for the last few years where they invite a load of players over, and like Stu Ham and Juan Alderet have all been going to these things. Now, whilst this one's yet unreleased, Juan Alderet's been playing his own signature model that Warwick have made for him. He's been playing that like on his Instagram channel, but it's not yet.
Is it just
launched.
A jazz bass?
No, it's nothing like that. It's a big fretless hollow body.
Of course.
It's totally different. But it sounds great, but it's completely different from sort of what, you know, we're used to seeing him with. And the Leyland Sklar, he's been playing like a star bass for quite a few years. The star bass is Warwick's kind of 335 shape. So yeah,
big humbuckers in there.
Yeah, exactly. So two active MEC humbuckers in the standard, the star bass two. But anyway, he's got his own master build, which has some refinements from the ordinary star bass, which are totally cool. He has because of course it's like a big jazz guitar, it's got that large lower bout which is a bit awkward on the arm, so there's a cutout on a hollow body.
Wait, what do you mean, like at the back or the front?
On the front,
like
angle.
A strap.
Yeah, but on a hollow body.
Really?
Yeah, it's really,
because the star bass is quite blocky, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Almost like it looks, the body looks a bit like a Fender Starcaster in
yeah,
that it's
right,
hollow
yeah.
body but and it's carved top, but it finishes in a very sort of square edge.
Yeah.
So this has, yeah, it's got a kind of like a strap cutaway, forearm
yeah.
cutaway.
Yeah, I've just brought up a picture for Mark to see. But yeah, it's got that and a kind of a revised F-hole in sort of more of an S. It's not an S for Sklar, but it's just sort
I
of
bet it
more,
is.
More of a straight yeah. shape. So they've done a few. They've said, it's weird that this has been announced, because even in the video that Sklar's got on Warwick, they're talking about like the one that he's got being a prototype, and then they've got this next one that doesn't even look like it's finished, and they're like, yeah, we think this is going to be closer to what it's going to be. So it's
right.
like, so they've sort of announced this master build before they finished it. But
the price.
Well, all the Warwick Masters built stuff is very, very expensive. It's a completely, the star base is like laminate wood, and this is completely solid, like a flame maple top and
what is the price?
Back and sides. I don't know,
Matt.
What is it, Matt?
8,439 euros.
Wow,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean
you've got to be really into his 2,500 sessions to.
Yeah,
that's a lot of sessions.
Yeah, the neck on the one he has is like rosewood for the E, A, and D, and then maple for the G string.
The fretboard, you mean?
What did I say?
You said the neck.
Oh yeah, I meant the fretboard.
Yeah. So rosewood on the bassier strings, and then maple on the lighter strings for a bit more zing.
Just the G. But yeah, it's great. It looks absolutely brilliant. It's a proper blingy bass, but it's a weird thing to sort of.
The thing about it is, I actually don't mind how it looks. Like, I'm not into that cutaway so much. The thing that ruins it for me, gold hardware. If that was chrome hardware, you know, that would actually look pretty classy. Like, I even quite like that sort of F hole that's not an F hole.
Well, the one that they were working on was black hardware.
Well, that's even worse.
No, black hardware's the best hardware.
No. Chrome. If you're building like a guitar like that, like flame top, don't put black hardware on
well,
it.
Well, there wasn't a flame top on the one.
What do you think it is? A Tanglewood?
Yeah.
Yes.
Whatever, it's cool anyway. Anyway, so yes. Sorry, listeners, that was a bit of bass news. But it is totally cool. Go check it out. Also check out Lee Sklar, he's cool. He looks like Gandalf.
Lee Sklar or Leyland Sklar. Same.
Call him either
or.
Yeah.
Either or. Matt Knight, do you want to tell us about the new Floyd Rose Railtail Tremolo?
I can indeed. I was like, oh, Floyd Rose, I don't know if I'm particularly interested because it would have no use to me. But actually, this is quite cool. This is a retrofit Strat Tremolo by Floyd Rose.
Yes.
So no modifications needed. It will fit into any standard... well, they call it modern string spacing, but 1/16th spacing, which I think is basically American 6-point trems, or sorry, Mexican 6-point trems, or vintage 6-point trems. But yeah, basically no up movement, only down movement, but you get an extra 15 degrees. And if you use, you know, a decent sort of guitar nut and locking tuners, you can get some pretty out there whammy moves without it going out of tune. So basically a super trem system.
So yeah, does this include a locking system, or is it just you just replace the trem and regular strap?
You're just
trem.
Replacing the trem on your strap.
Okay, fine.
Basically. And they do it in a narrow spacing or a like a wide spacing if you've got like a trem bucker or something like that, because you know the spacing on the pole pieces is slightly out.
Yeah.
The saddles are really nice. They're those sort of like mini roller ones.
Yep.
So you get less string friction, so you get better tuning stability as well. And just great. I think if you do a lot of trem work, like the modern 2-point trem on, say, the one that jumps out at me is the Jeff Beck, but any of the old deluxes had the same trem system. I always thought they were really good. But if you've got maybe a cheaper Fender and you want a better trem system, because those cheap ones aren't great, those sort of like mixed metal blocks don't give you tons of sustain, this is like a much better option for
they
like
look
these
great.
Tremors.
I was going to say, the look is incredible. They're like flawless, basically. Whereas on, you know, like a Fender trem, you can see the bolts into the body and you can see all the kind of mechanics of it. These look really neat,
really like tasteful. Really,
yeah, totally. And you know, that's
bulky, but like doesn't not overly. Like no, when I heard Floyd Rose doing the Strat to the trem, you make assumptions, but this is super tasteful.
Yeah. And I think it you know, it's not bulky like an old like Schaller or something like that.
It's not a Kayla, is it?
No, exactly. It looks really neat. It almost looks like the Music Man bridge, like on
You're right. Yeah,
on
the Annie Clark,
St. Vincent and stuff. Yeah, I think a really nice thing from Floyd Rose, which is not something that any of us would normally say. Normally,
if I had the need for it, I'd really consider it. If I didn't want to, I just wouldn't want to put one on my vintage. I say vintage, it's not really vintage, but my old Paisley Strat. But if I had like a more, if I had a cheaper one, if it wasn't loads of money, I'd think, oh, that'd be perfect for a mod mode, but it's going to be about three times the price.
Yeah, bit too much. Maybe we'll get in touch with them and see if they'll give us one, and we'll put it on that the pink sparkly Strat and see how
that would be quite cool.
It would indeed. Who wants to talk about the brand new Fender Custom Shop Bob Bain Son of a Gun Telecaster?
So I didn't really know a huge amount about who he was.
He was the villain in the third Batman movie.
Can you do this whole story in the Bane voice?
Oh, Bane.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, that was the joke I was making.
I didn't get it.
He's Kirko's dad. Took you a minute, but
anyway,
it was worth
anyway, so Bob Bain was a old session guitarist who played guitar for people like Frank Sinatra and Ray Charles and Nat King Cole.
Razal Ghul.
And Rachel Gould, I think it's Raish.
Oh, is
actually.
It?
Yeah.
Well, it actually depends on which version of the character you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, Joe and me were both talking about the one that I got correct.
Okay, fine.
So Joe is incorrect.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, it's so it's another one of these custom shop models which is going into the catalogue. They're making 1,000, which I think is quite a lot for...
It does sound like quite a lot.
Jay, you've misread that.
They're making
30 built by Paul Weller, but he played on thousands of sessions.
You're right, I did misread.
You're misreading the press release.
I am misreading the press release. You're quite correct.
So they're making 30 of them. Who's the builder?
Not 1,000. Paul Weller.
Okay, not Paul Weller.
Not Paul Weller.
Are you sure you've read the press release?
It's definitely Paul Weller.
Okay, fine.
Thank you for correcting me there, mate.
The awesome master-built telly that we had at GAC before I left. The pink paisley heavy relic with TV Jones pickup in the neck.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. So, Matt, do you want to give us the rundown on what this Bob Bain telly actually is?
Yeah, although one thing that Jay did mention, he played on the original Batman theme.
Yeah. So how about that?
Yes! It all comes back around. Bain created the Batman theme tune.
Oh, that is... I'm going. That's it.
That's it. See you later.
That is one for today.
But yeah, essentially, it's a 1953 blonde telly. It's got
Oh right, I see where you're going.
It's got the iconic sort of Telecaster look, but it's also got a humbucker in the neck and a Bigsby.
Yeah. The Bigsby is the bit.
The Bigsby does look incredibly cool on this. I mean, I know you're generally anti the Bigsby, Jay, but
this has probably been on that guitar for like
Bigsby's on telly
70 years nearly.
Yeah,
it's fun. Yeah, on this guitar, I think it looks pretty cool.
I've never seen that sort of Bigsby on a telly before.
No, it's weird.
B16.
B16. What's the normal one, Matty? Because there's normal you get
B5.
Like, yeah.
Because this one has a complete like wrap around. It's part of the whole telly bridge piece.
It is, yeah. So the bit that goes over the bridge pick, or the bit that the bridge pickup connects to, is also part of the bridge. Is there anything interesting about the switching? It looks like there's like a micro switch or something on there. Matt Knight, any?
No, I think it's just a. I think that's just markings on the pick guard, but I think it's just a standard volume tone. And three-way selector.
Okay, and humbucker in the neck. Do we know if that's just Fender like wide range or
it's
something?
It's a 59.
It's Seymour Duncan.
Yeah, Seymour Duncan
59. Duncan 59.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Cool.
And a no-caster.
He still plays that guitar now, apparently.
Wow.
He's 91.
Oh,
he's
wow.
He's played that guitar basically since he bought it in the mid-1950s.
Oh, that's so cool.
Incredible.
That's very, very cool.
That's the sort of thing where I think
Does he know that he could sell it and buy like 10 custom shops of it?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, at 91, he's probably like, I might as well just stick with this one.
No need to change. That's the sort of thing I think that is a cool thing for the custom shop to be making. Like, a lot of the time, the sort of tributes and the signature models and stuff, particularly for me on the Gibson side of things, I just think, they didn't need to make this. This person didn't play this guitar for very long. Things like the Billy Gibbons with the pinstriping on it.
And like the Tom Scholz... the guy from Boston, the it was like a...
That guitar was like, cool, though.
It was like a... It wasn't that cool. It was like this 1968 with a P90 in the neck.
I thought that guitar was cool. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for that.
I didn't like that guitar.
There's a lot of things out there that I just think, this didn't need to be made. You know, you're not honouring like someone who's had this guitar for a long time. It's like, they played this in one video and it looks vaguely cool, so you've made it. But this is cool. The guy played this for, what, like... 60 years or something, and it sounds like he's played on some iconic records and stuff. Why not honour him? He's 91, make 30 of them. That sounds really good.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, I hope some make it over here.
I think hopefully they will, and there's 30. You'd think the one would come out. Yeah, I think they will too. Talking of things that are inexpensive but also very, very cool, Matt and I, let's talk about the Joyo pedal carpet.
This is gear of the year right here. Gear of the year winner right now.
This is the
now.
Same as those buttons, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's the new barefoot buttons. Tell us about the pedal carpet.
I saw the kind of like video. It was like a sponsored video that came up on my Facebook feed, and I was just like, I'll watch it later. And then it so happened to come up, obviously, when you were writing the podcast. And I was like, I'll just have a quick look at it. It is basically a carpet, a piece of carpet with Velcro on top. With a rubber base that you can use as a fold-away pedal board.
Yes.
So it's multi-layered. So there's a rubber base, and then there's like an air pocket, as it were. There's basically just a piece of sticky Velcro-like material on top. You can actually cut into the top of it and run your cables in the carpet.
Okay, I see what you mean, yeah.
And then when you're done, you could just take some pedals off and you can just roll it up, or you can just pick up the carpet and fold it over and... take it with you.
I think this is cool for people who...
I think it's cool for home use.
Yeah.
I suppose actually if you kind of had a couple of bits, you're just like, I've got a couple of odd, you know, like you only use a TU-2 and you just like need something that to put it on for gigs that's easy to fold away. You could just like TU-2 and a Sans Amp, it's just on the pedal carpet and away you go. You don't have to spend... Well, I don't know how much these are going to be, but I can't imagine they're going to be very much at all. But you don't need to go out and spend £100 on a pedal board and a power supply.
Totally, totally. And like you say, you know, it's potentially something you could fold up into your gig bag or whatever, and it holds the pedals in place while you're on stage. I think that's what it's designed for.
I have to say that knowing some of the venues that we frequent, I'm not sure that you'd want to take this pedal carpet, stick it on the floor of one of these beer-soaked... venues.
It will end up like one of those beer mats that are on like a pub
and
bar.
And then
I mean, that's what it sort of looks like.
And then put it back in your living room. Do you know what I mean? That's not really...
I wonder if someone was like putting their pedals away after a gig and then just put a pedal with Velcro down on one of those beer mats and then went, hang on, I've got an idea. Joyo, get on the phone.
No, it was actually Jeffrey Oyo himself.
Jeffrey Oyo did it. Yeah, good. Yeah.
I love
Big Jeff. He's
Jeffrey Oyo.
Great dude. I like his Oi Band.
Oh no, that was his brother,
Jimmy Oyo.
Jimmy Oyo.
So ridiculous.
They don't get on.
No, they don't. I hear that they have a bad old time.
Yeah.
With that, should we move into some questions?
Question.
First up, Robin says, okay, here's the thing. I want to have that God is an Astronaut style guitar sound, where the sound is split into one heavily reverby sound with modulations, and the other is bit crushed and ring modded and filtered, and they've combined back together with a bit of the clean signal. Is there any realistic way of doing this cheaply and effectively without a high-end multi-effect unit like the Helix or the Fractal FX8? Matt Knight, are you familiar with God is an Astronaut?
I am not, but I can see what he's trying to do.
Okay,
no,
Joe, do you know what this is?
Well, yeah, but I mean, everyone knows who God is an Astronaut are.
Do they?
Well, yes, if you like post-rock, I guess, yeah.
Okay, fine. Well, I don't, so I don't know who they are.
Well, that's pretty well described.
Okay, so I'm not sure I quite understand. So one sound is like... clean but reverb-y.
Yeah.
And then the other is sort of like...
super heavy reverb on one side, and then, yeah, the other one needs to be like...
like bit crushed and affected.
Yeah, so you're basically running super a parallel 8-bit-y. Effects chain.
Okay. So what's the easiest way of doing that?
The easiest way to do it is actually a product I think we mentioned last week or the week before.
ES8.
The Pigtronics Keymaster.
Ah, okay.
It's probably the cheapest thing that I know to do it. They're about £250, so it's not going to be like mega cheap. But
compared to something like a Helix, it is quite cheap.
Yeah, because you've got two effects loops and then an input and an output. And then there's a crossfade control on the top, which can then be controlled with an expression pedal. So when you're in the center, obviously you get both, and then you can fade between one side or the other. But then it's also a loop switcher, so you can turn them on and off individually. So if you then want to add in like the bit crushed sound or anything like that, you can do that. The only thing you won't be able to do is blend in extra clean sound on top, unless you kind of run another chain in that, which I think you'd probably get a bit ridiculous. I think you'd better off just running two chains and then blending the two together.
Two chains. So I guess it would depend on what reverb pedal you've got, because if you've got something that's got like a wet dry mix, then you could heavily affect the wet signal, keep some of the dry signal in, then use that in one channel of the Keymaster, and then use your other distorted like your heavily affected stuff on the other channel of the Keymaster.
Yeah, you could totally do something like that. There's also, if you contacted the wonderful James at Bright Onion, he has made some bits for me before, and I think he could make a two-loop effects box that will do series or parallel, but you won't get the mix control.
Right.
So it depends if you kind of really want to sort of blend between the two or not.
Did you say the Keymaster can do, like, series and parallel?
It can do series and parallel. It's got a 10 dB input and output boost. And you can use it like a normal two-loop effect switcher as well, which is quite cool. It does a bit of everything. It's a great studio tool. But if you go on their website, they've got a really good demo of it kind of like switching in and out like two massive like pedal chains. I think that'd be the best way to do it.
Without giving you the option to shill stuff, does the Boss... I forget what it's called now, the one that's got two loops on it, not the ES8, the LS, the line selector, LS2.
LS2 has, you could run two pedal chains in that, but it will only allow you to mix both of them or have one or the other.
Okay.
So you won't necessarily get a, almost like a blend, because you effectively what you want to do is run them in parallel.
Yeah.
Rather than run them in series, because that way you'll get more of the clean and reverb and the bit crusher sound without them kind of like feeding one another. Then it will just sound really mushy. You could also look at the Gig Rig wet box, which I think we also talked about before, which is the single effects loop, but it allows you to use an expression pedal to blend in your clean sound.
Yes. Which actually might
so you
be
could do something like that.
Might be the best solution for this. Do you know how much they are?
They are about £189, I think.
Okay, but you need to buy an expression pedal on top of that.
An expression pedal on top of that. I mean, for me, I've tried the Keymaster, and I thought it was actually really good, because it's actually got XLR in and out as well.
Okay.
So you could even run, like, an extra feed straight in, because I know some people use it to run, like, microphone feeds and stuff, so you can blend between, like, a microphone feed and a guitar feed and things like that. Switch between, so it's definitely like more flexible for that sort of thing. Do you know how they do it normally, Joe? Do you know the band well enough to?
No, I don't. I wouldn't know how they actually go about it. They're just, you know, sort of another standard massive pedal boards.
Two guitar players.
Don't know. Actually, I've never seen one.
If you want the ultimate Boss suggestion, you can use the ES8 and you can actually run the pedals in parallel and then split effects into separate outputs.
Okay. So, well, there's your one ES8 mention for the podcast. That's all you're allowed.
Speaking of Pigtronics, and I know we do talk about this.
Did we talk about Pigtronics?
Is
that who makes the
Keymaster?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
that's
what we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes.
I was thinking about something else. I was thinking Toadworks for some reason.
No. Pigtronic. Different animal.
Yeah.
Tronics.
Another member of Star Fox.
Not works. Yeah.
Do a barrel roll.
Pictronix, like, I kind of feel sorry for Pictronix to a certain degree, because I really feel like they were maybe like 5 years too early.
Yeah.
You know, if they were releasing pedals now, they'd be, if they were releasing like new pedals now, they'd be like,
yeah,
people would consider them in with like probably like Chase Bliss and,
but the stuff, you're absolutely right. That's weird, that, isn't it?
It is really,
like,
weird.
5 years ago, when they were releasing their stuff, it was great, but they've kind of gone under the radar. Like the philosopher's tone, and the philosopher's rock.
Yeah,
Especially the tone. I thought that was the philosopher's tone was one of the best compressors on the market.
The Class A Boost. Still, for me, the best Make Goodera pedal on the market. Yeah, you plug that in with an 18-volt power supply.
The Infinity Looper is still probably the most complex looper. I mean,
it's definitely the best looper on.
I never understood it.
And the mothership as well.
Yeah,
that's discontinued. I think
some absolutely bananas pedals.
Yeah, and now they're just basically they're making. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but they're making mini stuff, micro pedals, right, that look suspiciously similar to the X5 stuff.
I don't know whether he's focused a lot of his time on Supro.
Yeah. Obviously, he's doing Supra and stuff as well. So.
Yeah, of course.
Let's do another question. Josh says, "Hey guys, I'm a fairly new player and I've upgraded the guitar and amp, so effects are the next thing. Do I buy multi effects or a few cheaper pedals to get started?" I think we've had this a few times. Jay, do you want to give us the info that we normally give?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on what you want to do. I think our suggestion generally tends to be there are so many good, cheap pedals on the market at the moment, cheap and good pedals on the market at the moment, that you should just get a bunch of cool looking things for not a huge amount of money, find the sounds that you like, and then invest in them a bit more. So, you know, go and look at the Moore pedals and the X5 pedals and like the new TC pedals. You know, if you find some sort of older Behringer pedals, you know, those Behringer pedals still sell for like 10, 15, 20 quid.
Yep.
They're not going to last you very long if you start using them in a sort of live environment, but they will certainly give you a taste of the sounds that you're into. And then you just, you know, start delving into that. So if you like the sound of a reverb, then, you know, start looking elsewhere and this. That is always, I think, the best way to go about it, because multi-effects, even with the best will in the world, they always end up a little bit more confusing than you want them to be.
Well, yeah, a lot of them do. I agree that single effects are a better way for you to get like your personality across, and like to buy like that. But
if you're just experimenting and starting out, multi effects are probably
the Zoom G3. I still don't think there's anything as good value for money on sort of the multi effects market that's so easy to use, because you're absolutely right. Like, multi effects are always a complete, you know, ball ache for you to control. But the G3 just has three physical rotary buttons available for each effect.
Yeah,
and you can combine up to three effects at once, so you could have a drive.
Exactly.
Can you not? I think you can actually do more than that as well, can't you? Because you can do like an amp sim.
Yeah, which has amp sims on there as well, which
could effectively be your drive, and then you could put three other pedals in there.
The amp sim does have to be one of them.
See, I like the Digitech RP55. If you really just want to go, I don't know what any effects are, I just really want to plug something in.
No, it's not easy to
scroll through some sounds.
Yeah, but it's a lot of scrolling. Presets.
That's my...
Yeah, but it's just cool to just kind of go up and down and go, that sounds cool, what is that? And then you can kind of find out a bit more. Because you might just go, actually, I don't want to use any pedals. I want to be like Mark Packham
loads of pedals, not when I'm actually playing live, but at home I'm rocking the pedal board. That's how I started, actually. I had a Zoom GFX 505 or whatever it is, or maybe it's just called the 505, and I bought it second hand. It didn't actually tell you what effects were in it, and it didn't tell you how you could edit them what they were. So it came with like a paper manual, which I didn't get because I bought it second hand, and you just push the button up and down. And it's like, oh, that sounds cool. What is that? Oh, it's a step phaser, I later found out. But it was more just like, that sounds cool.
There is exactly the problem. Like, not being able to control the effects. I think if I had one of those effects and I found a phaser, no doubt, as it's a cheap pedal, the phaser is going to be quick and really
airplane-y,
really deep and really obvious. And I'd be like, wow, phasers sound awful. I won't use any of those. And
I think that
actually did put me off phasers for years until I realised you could use them subtly and slowly just as like something to make your tone a bit more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess get something cheap and fun, whether you go for like the single pedals. I mean, that is going to cost you more, but yeah, a multi-effect that you can edit. And like you say, the G3 at the moment seems to be the go-to. Like I see it on forums all the time where people are like, yeah, I just bought a Zoom G3 because I'm starting out with effects. I think that would be my advice, is Zoom G3. Let's do... Okay, Frank's question. So Frank says, Google is letting me down on this one. I'm thinking about getting a JTV Variax. The only thing holding me back is the idea of dealing with battery maintenance. Now, I know that different Line 6 products can power the Variax via the included proprietary cable. This cable carries power, guitar signal, and MIDI to and from the guitar, maybe more. Is there a single breakout box that I can plug in a Variax cable, plug a Variax cable in that would power the guitar and split the guitar signal into a normal guitar jack? This would then be the first pedal on the pedal board.
Oof.
Matt Knight.
Jeez.
Yes, if I remember rightly, when I was working at Anderton's, we had a demo Line 6 battery pack that was a Variax box that you plugged a power supply into. And then it was stereo jack from the guitar into the box, and then just a normal jack out from that into a cable, and that powered the unit.
That's what I seem to remember as well. There was a Line 6 box.
You didn't have to use the Cat 5 cable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was just a breakout box.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it still exists, though, because...
Well, why would it?
But the technology is still the same in the Yamaha ones as it is in the old JTVs.
Oh, I see.
Sure it was just called a Variax breakout box.
Something like that. Because it was... The thing with the Variaxes was always like you needed that stereo cable demo them.
Oh, here you
really.
Go. Well, if you can head to the lovely store, gak.co.uk, in stock right now.
No advertising.
Whoa, don't quote that we've got in stock.
And
they may or may not have stock of the Line 6 Variax AB foot pedal.
Is that what it's called?
Exactly what you need, yeah.
Okay, just call up, ask for Joe Branton on the customer services help
Bo
desk.
Banton.
I will hang up on you.
Call up and ask for Bo Banton on the Bustamer Burvis's Belf desk.
it's listed on the site as running the 300, 500, 600, and 700, but I'm pretty sure it runs the modern JTVs as well because they use the same battery pack.
Yeah, definitely worth investigating. Anyway, how much, Matty? Not a huge amount of money.
About £40.
Right, okay, yeah, definitely worth investigating. The good thing about Line 6, and this has been the same since they started, is that they've got great user forums on their website. So if you are struggling, or, you know, if our information is incorrect, which it most likely is, the Line 6 forum probably is a good place to go and ask the same question. They should probably be able to help you out. So,
but it can be done. I know it can be done. I think if you want to run the dream rig, so if you want to run it into the back of a pod and then into
a DT25 or something.
DT25, I think you need to use the Cat 5 cable. Otherwise, I think you can just use a normal stereo jack. Because it's effectively then it's almost a bit like an active pickup system, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's got like a stereo plug in it. You can plug an all mono cable in, but it's the way the jack plug is inside that activates the battery.
Yeah, definitely.
The dream rig. Do you think they called it that because it was in their dreams? Anyone would buy all three of those products.
Yeah, so what was the dream rig? It was an HD500X, a Variax,
and a DT25 or a DT50.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a very, very weird amp. I know Matt has always raved about it. Has always, not raved about it, but like sort of defended it. I always thought that was a very, very strange amp. I couldn't quite get my head around it.
I always thought they sounded pretty good.
I think that it's one of those amps that definitely wasn't like initially plug and play.
Yeah.
Because you kind of had to like mess around, because effectively you had different power amp and preamp configurations. So it's sort of like, it was a bit like how there's that JHS pedal that's like six different Big Muffs, and it's all analog, but it uses a microprocessor to select which components it wants to use. And the DTV works works the same way. So it's like all of these different amps in one, but it's just this little processor determines how the valves switch on and what power rating they run at.
Yeah. So let's take one last question. Reese says, looking for a cheap octave pedal. Narrowed it down to the Joyo. What was that? Jimmy Oyo's?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey Oyo's.
Jimmy is in the band.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, the Joyo Voodoo Octave or the Moore Pure Octave. Which one do I go for? Joe Branton, you're a king of octave pedals.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you've chosen two things there that probably don't track very well. So, The more Pure Octave is not the best at tracking.
Brandon Evil.
Yes, more do everything. Everything else, more do is brilliant. The Tender Octave, which was the octave pedal that Moore did before, which they had to remove from the shelves.
Why was that?
Electro Harmonics.
Okay.
That it was very very close. To,
okay, fine.
To the Pog. And they replaced it with the Pure Octave, and it just wasn't really as good. The controls were a bit weird on the Pure Octave because you're on a rotary that selects like whether you are one octave down or one octave down and one octave up, one octave down and two octaves up, and it goes around. You've got a ludicrous amount of options on there, and it just its tracking really wasn't great.
Wasn't the Tender Octave, didn't it get a cease and desist?
Yeah, that's what we're just saying. Yeah. From Electro Harmonics.
Yes.
They do a double one. I don't know if that one ever.
That is. That this out. This recently surfaced on the group that Moore have released a double version of a pedal that we know that they were told to take off the market. So I don't know. But someone had shared recently that was on the Moore website. It's certainly not on GAK's stock listing for Moore at the moment, so it's not something we can get right now. But I would say if they can get that one to hit the shelves, everyone go and buy one because they were great. They were really, really good and super affordable octave pedal. And if that does come out, it's possible they'll get another cease and desist, so buy it.
Just buy one.
Buy it as soon as it comes out.
That Pro looks awesome because it's four presets, sub-level and up-level, and then you've got six other controls on top to control its overall amount.
It's really good. I love all the Moore Pro stuff. Listeners, if you've not checked out the Moore Pro pedals, give them a look because they're so much more than Moore's normal micro pedals. They're more going after... more complex, larger pedals, but still keeping them super affordable. I really liked the... I had one of their reverbs for a while.
The Shimverb.
I had the Shimverb Pro.
Didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Again, just to back up exactly what you said there, the Shimverb wasn't very good, I didn't think.
The Shimverb Pro was quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that came down to the fact that the Shimverb was suspiciously the same color as the Boss RV5, which weirdly is another pedal that I've always held a certain level of disdain toward.
RV6 is the new one.
So I never really liked the RV5, and the Shimverb I didn't really like, but then they brought out the Blues Crab and then the Skyverb
as well, the Skyverb.
And those are both really good pedals, and I think they took some of the tech from those pedals and put them into the Shimverb Pro, which made it a really really cool pedal.
Yeah they were great. Back to this one, neither of those I would have thought are going to track incredibly well. I really really think of all the effects that you can cheap out on. Octave is so hard to do that with. If you cheap out on an octave pedal, it just won't track.
Yeah,
it just won't do its job. Like if you cheap out on a drive, it might sound a bit boxy, but it's still usable. You cheap out on a compressor and it might be a bit squashed, but it's still usable. If you cheap out on an octave pedal, it won't do its job, so there's no point, which is why octave pedals are expensive.
Yeah, I mean, how much is a nano or micro?
They're actually the same price. The Pog, the micro Pog and the nano Pog are the same price, and they're about 160 quid. So
it's
not a cheap pedal.
Yeah.
DC stuff and up.
Yeah, the Sub and Hub. Yeah, the TC
it's
Sub and Hub.
Digital, isn't it?
I haven't really heard. Yeah, I mean, the other one, Octave Multiplexer, which I think is Electronics is cheaper, but it's never been as good.
That's got the filter, though, isn't it? That's got that weird filter.
Yeah, it's never been.
And I still think it's the best sounding one, the OC2.
Yeah.
Because it's got a really cool, like, Optivy synthy sort of sound to
definitely.
It.
Definitely. The Boss OC2, because you've got one on your board, Matt, haven't you, the OC2? And I bought one off of you.
You can't get those any more new, though, can you?
No,
the OC3 now would
but
be.
But you see them on the second-hand market. You can pick them up for around £100, and they're really good if you don't need an octave up, because it goes one octave down or two octaves down.
Yeah.
And I don't think Reese specified which way he wanted to go.
Funny enough, with the OC3, one of the features that I never got round to using, but I know a couple of you used it well, is that you've got that poly mode that you can dial out the upper strings and it just affects the E and the A. Which is quite cool if you're doing loads of riffs, but then you want to like play on the top strings without any effect. I thought that was always... I never found it useful, but some people were kind of doing it for, like, if you're playing jazz and you're doing rhythm chords and lead work. Works really well.
Yeah,
definitely.
So,
but another actually, I've just thought of a cheap alternative.
Okay,
Line 6 M5.
Yes, that would
has both a sort of Pog esque octava on it, and it also has a bass octava, which is more sort of OC2 style in its controls. And those are what, £75, £80 on the
No, they're a bit more than that. 95.
Oh, they've gone up a bit, have they? All right. Well, okay. Still under £100. And you get an absolute bucket of effects with them, as well as a really good well tracking octava from Line 6. So maybe that I would definitely I think avoid, as much as I really like Joyo and Moore, not for this.
Yeah. With that, let's call this a podcast. If you want to hear some more, we're going to talk about Matt Knight's ungiggable rig in the Patreon episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support us making the podcast. At the $1 tier, you get an ad-free early version of the main podcast every week. At $5, you get an extra half an hour, plus access to all the old content. I think there's something like 80 hours of content to listen through at the moment, plus all the mini-series that we do, Branton's Rant On. That's where we're also going to drop this new series looking at old gear of the year things from old guitar magazines. And as you heard earlier in this episode, Matt is also doing a whole bunch of interviews with pedal builders and guitar builders and stuff, doing interviews there. So that's also patreon.com/guitar nerds. And from $10 a month, you become one of our executive backers, like these people have. What song are we going for? What music have we mentioned? Because you mentioned the Blues Crab, how about a Rock Lobster?
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Puncher, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, James Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will and Claire, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anson, Moon, Gavin, Colin Addison.
Lobster. Thanks very much for listening this week. If you want to join in the conversation, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds. As Matt said, I guess Instagram is the place for guitar related stuff now, so do make sure you follow us there. You can go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/guitar nerds
YouTube
videos, where we just put up a video about the top 5 weirdest Ibanez guitars of all time.
We've had some great stuff on there recently.
We have indeed. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm working hard.
I'm going to release my own mini series on our YouTube channel
called
it's
you've not even thought about it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good.
We could do the Branton's Rantons. Is anyone listening to this podcast an animator? Because you could animate Branton's Ranton and put that up on the YouTube, but then people have paid for it, so maybe not.
No, on the YouTube I want it to be different, maybe something like Branton in the Buff or something like
that.
Okay,
good, we'll work on that. With that,
well, I've got access to the YouTube channel, I have all the logins, so
I don't want
you
that.
Literally have no control over what I put up there.
No one wants to see your login.
Well,
thanks for listening this week. We will see you next week.
Bow.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bow.
Bow.